Now with me on the yellow couch today is a man whose photography has made many of us look at our own city from a very different perspective. Johnny Miller is a multimedia activist and storyteller and a drone photographer who uses his camera to highlight social inequality, not only here in South Africa, but all around the world, in fact. And his photos have appeared in numerous publications and exhibitions, but perhaps most famous to you will be the Time magazine cover earlier this year, which depicted two adjacent neighborhoods of Johannesburg in such very stark juxtaposition. Johnny, thanks so much for joining us in studio today. Welcome to Cape Talk.
Thanks, Pippa. It's nice to be here.
Where did the interest in photography begin, or did it grow out of the interest in anthropology?
You know, what's funny is that a lot of creatives that I've met in Cape Town have been doing this their whole lives. And I picked up a camera for the first time when I was 30 years old. So wow. I've been through a few different iterations of career and life. I started off in the States, working in Washington, D.C., and then kind of moving around a bit, ending up in South Africa to go to University of Cape Town, study anthropology, as you mentioned, and then started a little photography business here based on sort of my interest in, I guess imaging, but imaging with a social conscience. So Unequal Scenes has kind of like taken that to the next level, which has been, I've been super fortunate basically as a photographer, but then also as sort of a small business owner as well.
Okay. Now, I mean, that iconic shot, there's something about that perspective of looking straight down on those communities that there's no way to look away. You're drawn in straight to that absolutely jarring, juxtaposition. Did you have that image in mind when you thought, to get that image, I need to set up a drone, or how did it evolve that you came to take that shot?
Yeah. Well, 2016 is when I bought my drone.
Okay.
I came back here and I really like hiking, actually. So it's kind of a story. I'll tell you a little story. I was hiking on Table Mountain, and this is early 2016. Took a video of Kloof Corner and put it onto YouTube. And my friend Mike, who lives here, he grew up here, said, "Wow, I've never seen Table Mountain look like that before." And that to me was this light bulb moment where I realized a drone could change people's perspectives. And because of my interest in sort of social justice issues and the anthropology background, I decided to go to Masipumalele and Lake Michelle, that area near Noordhoek, and put up the drone. And as a photographer, you kind of know when a shot is going to be good. You know, so when it came on the screen, I was kind of like, this is a powerful image. But when I put it online, and I only had 200 people liking my Facebook page at the time, so I was not like a big deal at all. Overnight, I woke up and it was crazy. Thousands of people commenting and sharing and liking, and it blew up into the thing that it is now. So that was kind of the start of, I guess, this viral story that tapped into perhaps kind of a vein that was just under the surface in South Africa zeitgeist, if I can say that, between the new technology of the drone, which people seem to really enjoy discussing as far as how I took the photo technically, but then also the inequality and, you know, Roads Must Fall was going on at that time as well. It was like the right time for that project to come, I think. And 25 years after 94, I think there was just a lot of stuff bubbling around. And then, I mean, that's led to, honestly, bigger and bigger sort of exposure for the project, culminating probably in that Time magazine cover, which my friend Erin actually wrote the story for. She's the Time correspondent based here in Cape Town for Africa. So it was kind of a collab as well, which was cool.
I mean, I can't help smiling at the thought. 30 years old when you pick up a camera for the first time to be on. How old were you when the Time cover came out?
Well, that was earlier this year, so 38. I'm 38 years old,
There are not many photographers who will ever see their work on a Time magazine cover, let alone less than a decade after picking up the camera for the first time. It's an incredible story. Let's just dispense with the technical side of the conversation before we really delve into what for me is the more interesting part, is what you're looking at and how you're making people look at it with you. Technologically, drone photography, easy, difficult? Talk to us about the challenges.
It's super easy, honestly. I mean, as a photographer, you're not dealing with exposure. You're not dealing with shutter speed. Generally, it's all automatic. It's set up on the drone. I mean, I'm talking like the smaller sort of commercial drones that I used to take that first photo. So it's really about access. So the cool thing with drones, and I think they're really kind of a democratic tool in a way. And that might be kind of a reach, but I don't think it is, because, you know, the airspace has been reserved for the very rich in governments ever since kind of we've invented lighter than air technology. So the fact that you can, Pippa, go out and buy a drone, put it up above this building and take, and I'm not getting into the legality of that, which is a separate conversation, but you can physically put it up above you and you have the power to take the photo, which you never had before. So it's kind of a democratic revolution in a way. I mean, we wouldn't have been able to see that Masipumalele Lake Michelle image except on Google Earth, which is fairly low resolution. So yeah, as a photographer, it's pretty easy. It's pretty easy to learn how to fly them. They're fairly cheap. I'm not by any means sort of in love with drones. I think they're another tool to use, just like your camera or your cell phone or a 360 camera. Mm. I think many small business owners, many up-and-coming photographers are quite mercenary in the tools that they'll use because they have to be. So technologically quite savvy and adept at moving between whatever seems to work best for the story you're telling.
Okay. Mm. Now, let's talk about this story that you're telling and those shots. I mean, as you said, there's no shortage, unfortunately, of these horrible juxtapositions in South Africa. It is created that way by the design of the apartheid government that we were kept separate from one another. And it has happened that Massey and Lake Michelle and the Noatuk and Komaki area is such a great example here of people who live immediately alongside one another and yet whose lives intercept virtually nowhere except perhaps at the household servant level, for lack of a better word, where somebody can live literally 500 meters down the road from Massey, never have set foot inside that community, have no concept of what the living conditions are like inside, and have chosen to remain blind to that. Is part of your intention in taking these photos and growing this series as you have done to say, don't look away, don't allow yourself the luxury of looking away?
Yeah, absolutely. It was always intended to provoke a conversation on what it meant to live side by side like that. There's a lot of, I don't want to say guilt, but there seems to be a lot of attention focused on the photo series because people think that I'm somehow accusing the rich of keeping the poor poor. And that's never been the intention. Other people can take my images and they can use them for whatever purposes they want. That's the power of a photograph. It's reproducible. Mm-hmm. And, you know, iconic photographs can be used by a lot of different interests. And my photographs have been used by a lot of different interests. Some of them I don't particularly agree with. But the intention initially was to provoke a conversation. And they've done that, like, better maybe than any other photos on inequality. In fact, if you go to 2015, you know, in Google image search, you can, like, go back in time. Go to 2015 and Google image search inequality. And you get a bunch of like clip art. You get like two clip art men on a balancing beam that's like off center, or you get some graphics, or maybe you get photos of poverty. But the photo of Lake Michelle and Massey, and then a whole bunch of other photos that I've taken, have kind of become this visual currency of what it means to have rich and poor in the same photo. Mm. That like woke people up, or it sort of shook people and saying, this could be me, you know, this relevance of having the two sides in one photo, one image that wasn't photoshopped. I think maybe it forced some introspection, not just on the behalf of Cape Townians and South Africans, but around the world, because I've got huge response from, for example, India. Mm. I've got huge response from people in the global north, even though I think the images in South Africa and India and Mexico are maybe more striking as far as their visuals. But it's kind of, I don't know, it's been kind of transcendent in the way that it's forced people to confront this economy and our history, really, that forces us to live like this. And just a quick point, and I know people will be calling in, I know that Masipumelele did not exist pre-94. And I know a lot of the images that I've taken did not exist pre-94. But the environment and the ecosystem of how urban morphologies are formed and exist in South Africa is undeniably a byproduct of the systems that came before it, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like we dropped ahistorically into 94 and all of a sudden, you know, we can forget the past, obviously, right? So land where people decided to live after 94 and sort of make encampments that turned into these settlements, which turned into basically mini cities like Emazama-Yetu and Masipumelele. That's a direct byproduct of apartheid. It's a direct byproduct of disenfranchisement from hundreds of years ago as well, before apartheid. So I just wanted to say that.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure there's someone about to call in going because it happens all the time on my Facebook page.
Okay. I'm intrigued in how you've taken this into a global setting. Because I mean, I had a look at the site. It's called Unequal Scenes. If you are searching, by the way, for the website with more of these images, the project is called Unequal Scenes, and the website unequalscenes.com is where you can look at a whole lot more images beyond those few famous ones that have made the headlines in the newspapers and Time magazine, etc. I was fascinated by the photos of Mexico City, for example. I mean, just the scale of them, the sheer number of and you know, and the scale of poverty and, you know, and degrees of poverty from one side of the photo to the other was extraordinary. How did you come to take it further? Did people come to you and say, I've got another sort of image of a similar kind I want you to take a look at? Or did you go looking for them?
Yeah, I mean, the project has been almost completely self-funded. So to some extent, I've had to be careful and be creative as far as how I take more photos, right? Because it's expensive. Yeah. It's expensive and it's difficult. I think some people think I just fly around a city until I spot something. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of research. There's a lot of reliance on people on the ground. And in Mexico City, for example, that was part of a project with Thomson Reuters Foundation.
Okay.
So they actually hired me as a photographer to go to Mexico, Kenya, India, and South Africa to take photos for a project of theirs. And piggybacking on top of that, I managed to take some photos for my own.
Right.
I think any photographer in your audience right now is probably shaking their head going, yeah, this is how we work,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you get a plane ticket and a hotel room bought for you, then what else can you do to make that worthwhile? So I realized in 2016 when I took those Mexico images, it was a big opportunity to visit a country I'd never been to before. Mm-hmm. And relied on friends, relied on actually a helicopter pilot who had done some similar inequality work about 5 years ago. So it's kind of like a puzzle. It's like you're an investigator, right? Pulling together the pieces of the puzzle. The final flying of the drone, taking the photo, takes maybe 15 or 20 minutes, but it's that sort of big research process that goes in ahead of it.
Where to from here with these images? There's a long, long list of exhibitions on your website, Johnny, most of them international. Is the plan to keep on doing this? Do you want to compile them all into one major exhibition here in South Africa, for example?
Would love to, Pippa. Thank you for bringing that up. If there's anyone listening who wants to host an exhibition of mine, I've never actually had an exhibition in Cape Town. I've never had a major exhibition. There's a few opening this fall. There's one in Brussels. There's one in Tel Aviv. It's been an incredibly successful project. But honestly, I don't think it's over yet, which, you know, it's been 3 years, but I don't think that inequality is lessening, and the data bears that out. Not so much in South Africa, but definitely in America and places like the UK, inequality is actually increasing. Mm. So I'm talking about like the top 0.1% of the very richest, not just the 1%. So these issues aren't going away. And places like Brazil, which I've never visited, which have very similar morphologies. And by that, I mean the way that the ground looks in cities looks very similar to South Africa. So that's a big one as well that I want to visit. But also it's kind of morphed into me kind of being an ambassador for awareness on inequality. I just came from a conference earlier today called Think Future in Stellenbosch at Spear, where I basically talked about the work that I do and bringing a creative lens to difficult social justice issues. Inequality, yes, but then also climate change and other images, other SDG issues that I'm sort of passionate about. So it's kind of morphing into that as well. I don't necessarily just want to take photographs, but I want to kind of like broaden the narrative, you know, and get people talking because it's important. I mean, this is really, really important stuff. Inequality is the defining challenge of our time. That was a quote from Barack Obama in 2013. Yeah. So it kind of shows the gravity. I mean, climate change is obviously a big issue, but inequality is not going away either.
Well, thanks for bringing the conversation to our studio this afternoon, Johnny. It's been great to have you with us.
Thank you.
And just want to remind our listeners, if you'd like to take a look at more of the images and get a sense of the scope of the project, the website is unequalscenes.com. You've been listening to the photographer, Johnny Miller.